Lee to ask you to listen for the good news. Because often translations of this end with, and John told them more examples of the good news. And it often seemed like he didn't say a whole lot of good news. So I just want to ask you, I want to open it up first. Where was the good news in the things that John said? Number one, so when you start to serve Jesus instead of yourself, you become happier as well as the people around you. Sure. What else? Where was the good news? You can change. Isn't that good news? One more. What'd you hear that was good news? The chaff burning off, which is really the thing that we use to protect ourselves. Absolutely. I want to start with a question that I want you to ponder. What is wrong with people? I mean, seriously. What's wrong with people? Are people inherently violent or inherently lazy or inherently self-interested or inherently ego-driven? Or like, what the heck is going on in the world? Because I heard that God didn't make no junk, but then I look around the world and I see all kinds of things that do not seem consistent with God and God's plan. And I keep wondering, what the heck is wrong with people? And so I seriously want you to consider, I'm going to give you a full 30 seconds. I want you to think, what do you actually believe is wrong with people? And I want you to get real honest with yourself. When you say, people are so, what do you actually think? Okay, what do you think? What's wrong with people? People are afraid. It makes them do a whole bunch of things. What else? What's wrong with people? Self-interested, tied up in ourselves. What else? Insecure. In many different ways. Feelings on that? Go ahead, Daisy. People are afraid to be vulnerable in front of other people. What else? People are driven by materialism and tangled up in it. So there's a captivity that's part of that too. Yeah. Slavery, bondage. Yeah, what else? Disconnected from source. Two more. I need two more. Kathy. Judgmental. People are judgmental. Feeling unworthy of love. I saw another hand. I'll just pick up another one. Unaware. People are unaware. It is so important that we know what we really believe about this. It is so important that we are extra clear with ourselves about what we really think about people. Because it makes all the difference when we start talking about how do we think the world should be different. I got in this great classic argument with my dad and my brother, who are a lot more conservative than me, which really isn't all that hard to do. But we got in this argument about how to address issues of folks living outside. And it got kind of heated, because that's how my family rolls, and it very much discomforted my wife, and she interrupted the conversation to say, what I think is going on is you guys have different assumptions about people. That you, talking to my dad and my brother, you guys assume that most people will cheat the system if they have the opportunity, and so the system needs to be stringent about preventing cheaters. And you believe that most people will work within the system, and it's the occasional person that will cheat it. And my dad and my brother nod, and I nod, and my wife is like, so this conversation is over because you're not going to change each other's mind. She just wanted the conversation to end, let's be honest. But she was right, because at the bottom of it, it didn't matter what solutions we thought of, because we had fundamentally different beliefs about people. And those were inherently going to be in conflict everywhere we tried to come up with solutions, because a solution that I would come up with would assume certain things about people that would not align with the assumptions that they made. Think about how different conversations in our political world would be if instead of talking up here, we talked about these deep core assumptions we have about people. And what if we just asked people, what do you really think about people? And invited them to say it out loud. Because one thing I've learned from Jesus is that, man, when you say stuff out loud, then you have to deal with it. When you keep it inside, you don't have to deal with it. You don't have to bring it out into the light and confront. I really believe that. That's messed up. You're gonna be like, doop-a-doo. But when you have to say it, then it's like real in this whole different way. This is why Jesus names demons before he exorcises them, because he wants people to know that they are, that they exist, that they inhabit this person. And then he tells them, not terribly politely, but more politely than I would, to shut up and go away. But he names them first, because naming is such an important part of knowing what is real, or knowing what is present, not necessarily what is in control, but just naming. And so I think it's critical for us to be people who name reality. See, God is co-creating with people. Of this, I am convinced. That God is not this mechanistic architect who put together this amazing system and said, figure it out! But God is actively at work co-creating with us. Then why is everything a little bit less than ideal, is a better way to say it? Well, because God's working with us. Like the real us, right? Not the best of us. Not us when we're absolutely well-fed and really well-nurtured and cared for and we've got lots of pop and energy. But like the cranky 7 in the morning, the car alarm is going off outside us, right? The, like, we just got into a big fight and we're very caught up in how right we are, us, right? And so God's got to work with the real us, because there is no other us, right? Why John before Jesus? Why does this herald in the wilderness have to come and prepare the way of the Lord before Jesus gets here? Well, let's look at what he said. Because he's got a lot of interesting things to say in this passage in particular. Number one, what did he call the people that came out right away? You vipers, you brood of vipers, you venomous serpents. Now, if we go back to Genesis, are snakes bad? It depends, right? What is bad? Bad has a whole lot to do with what we define as good, and usually it centers around us. So we're not big fans of snakes when they're biting us. But like out in the world, they are another creature of God's that's really beautiful. Have you ever examined a snake skin before? Talk about like sitting there and blowing your mind. How the heck do they even move? It's crazy, and there's this whole, I could geek out on that stuff for a long time. Why is it bad to be a viper, a venomous snake? Because you can hurt people. But more, he tells us afterwards, you brood of vipers. And then what did he say next? Who told you you could flee the coming wrath? Well, I want you to think about what it means to set it up that way. You brood of vipers, who told you you could escape the coming wrath of God? If you came there for the explicit purpose of escaping the wrath of God, it means you're in a mindset of fear. It means you're in a mindset of defensiveness. You need to defend yourself from the Lord God, and you're going to go to John to up your defenses game. No wonder John is pissed. If that's why you're coming to him, you totally miss the point. Right? If you're coming to get better at defending yourself, you really miss the point. Because what is the point? What are you supposed to be doing? What does he say? Change your life, but specifically, bearing fruit. Or else. Or else. But let's talk about that for a second. Do you want to be good? Ooh, you're hesitating maybe, because what is it to be good? Well, maybe I just need to be good enough, which is what being good ultimately boils down to. I can't be perfect, but if I'm good, I'm really just trying to be good enough. And if I'm trying to be good enough, what am I really trying to do it? Not be bad, right? I'm trying to flee the coming wrath by being good enough, which means ultimately I am trying to create a defensible posture. I'm good, back off. I'm good, don't mess with me, I'm good, right? Or at least I'm good enough, I'm not like that guy, look over there. Ha, ha, ha. It's a defensive posture, trying to be good. Ultimately, it might not seem like it at first, but if you really work into it, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to set up some kind of defense to protect us from the coming wrath of God. When we look at our lives, we're trying to measure up rather than measure growth. Did I do enough to be enough? Or am I moving in this direction that God wants for me? And I don't know if you remember, I said this thing a while ago, blank is the thief of joy. Do you remember what the blank was? Comparison. Comparison is the thief of joy, and measuring up is inherently a comparison metaphor. Being good enough is inherently a comparison metaphor, right? Growth is a comparison against yourself. Where were you? Where are you? And what that actually is a directional metaphor. Where am I going? Where was I? Where am I? Where am I headed? Where can I grow next? It's actually not necessarily a comparison metaphor. It's a directional metaphor. So I want to ask you about your internal life. Is your internal life full of doubt and fear and self-critique? Is your internal life and your reflection on yourself full of a language of comparison and measuring up? Are you participating in a good enough, at least I'm not that guy frame? Because if you are, there's good news. There's good news. What else did John say? He said, the axe is at the root of the tree. Why is that good news? Well, it should be good news. At least it shouldn't be a fearful statement for any of us, as long as our lives are bearing fruit. If we're in a growth mindset, if we're on our way, then we're a tree that is budding and blooming and blossoming and fruiting, and that tree ain't gonna get cut down, right? It's the one that's just like gnarled and not growing and not budding and not fruiting. That's the one that's gonna get cut down, because we gotta make space. We can't have all this dead wood just hanging out, sucking up the sunlight, right? But then you say to yourself, but how will I know? Am I a growing tree or am I a dead tree? Fear grips you, and all of a sudden you're back in the same place you were before, where you're trying to measure up and figure out if you're better than or good enough for us. The axe coming for me. And you might come to religion and say, I need a rule book. I need a rule book that will tell me on what side I'm on. I need somebody to give me the specific details where I can measure my life on a little Scantron sheet, and I can get 85%, which is better than a 70%, which is good enough to get into advanced placement courses, right? But John says the point is to do what? Bear fruit. Rule books do not help you bear fruit. Rule books help you measure and assess things, but they don't help you cultivate things. A lesson book helps you cultivate things. This is how I know that the Bible is not a rule book, because that is not its purpose. And boy howdy, are there lots of great examples of people doing really poorly, right? Like really being very self-interested, really being violent, really being distracted. Why would they share those stories with us if not to help us see what growth looks like? Where we came from, where we are, and where we're going. Move from a defensive posture that a rule book is all about. How can we defend and secure our status as good or good enough? To a lesson book that constantly invites us to risk, to try, to screw it up, knowing that we have a loving teacher who will help to correct us and refine us. Not to correct us and condemn us, but to correct us so that we might grow more fully and more fruitfully. So then all these people come to John, and they all ask him these questions. And if you look underneath of it, and you want to come to Bible study tomorrow, we'll get more into the specifics of the text, but if you look at what they ask him, his response is, look, buddy, here's what you got to do. Just make sure that you are not full of fear or using fear in your relationships with other people. Don't be full of fear of lack. Don't be full of fear of scarcity. And don't utilize fear to manipulate other people or get control of reality. Because fear is the enemy of growth, because fear puts us in a defensive posture. Fear causes us to shut down and not risk and not move in the direction of God. So he tells us that the Messiah is going to come and he's going to separate the wheat from the chaff. And that is good news, because each one of you is a kernel of growth potential. God didn't make no junk, right? And there are no people of wheat over here and people of chaff over here. That ain't a thing. That ain't a thing. There's people who are wheat and chaff. And so what does it mean for the Messiah to come and separate the wheat from the chaff? Well, maybe, just maybe, the vision of Christ is that people are gathered together without their defenses, without their posturing, without their trying to be good enough, without their trying to earn or deserve, but just being a gathered collection of people ready to grow. Or people ready to be made into something nutritious and feeding, something nourishing and good, that is a combination of God's influence and human action, that is a co-created abundance that satisfies and nourishes bodies and souls. The unquenchable fire is good news, because you don't have so much chaff that you could put out the Spirit. There is not any one of you that has so many defense mechanisms and so much scar tissue and so much trauma and hurt and pain and suffering that you could put out the Spirit of God. God can take all that and more. How many of you have ever dumped a bunch of stuff on a fire and put it out accidentally? You can't do that with God. All of those shells and protections and defense mechanisms, all those trying to earn being good enough and being worthy enough, and all the pain that has been caused in your life and the pain that you've experienced and the pain that you've given to others, God can take all of that and more. There is liberation possible. That's what joy means, awareness of the grace, the abundant grace of God, and a delight in the possibility of being able to be free. Now, the warning. If Jesus Christ has come to remove and destroy and dismantle all defense mechanisms that humans have created, and we have spent all of our creative energy building, designing, maintaining, and reinforcing our defense mechanisms, then when all of that gets stripped away, will we have enough substance? Will we have enough life force energy left in us to sprout and grow? Or have we spent all of our energy and all of our time building up a defense and a posture to prove something to the world? Because what happens when we don't have anything left to prove and we just get to be? And here's the secret. Here's the evangelical secret. If you don't feel like you have enough, if you don't feel like you can trust enough, if you don't feel like you know God well enough, if you feel like you need all of these defenses to hold yourself together, you can grow in your knowledge of God. Because God is just waiting for us. Just waiting for us to make a little bit of space so that that part of us that inherently wants to be full of effervescent joy can just break out. All we gotta do is listen for the good news and delight when we find it. So go forth from this place remembering that God has placed inside of you a spirit of growth, a spirit of power and of purpose, and that there is not enough defense mechanisms in the world to prevent you from being full of the life of God. So go forth to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with this God who is already at work sprouting seeds in you. Amen.